Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. The song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin Tyler McElroy.
And I'm Sydney Smurl McElroy.
So it's going to be like that, huh, Birmingham? Oh, man, I'm excited. It's going to be a good one. It's fine. My feelings aren't hurt anymore. I'm very zen about it.
Were you tipping your fly when we came out?
Just a little bit. No, actually, I was, if I can brag for a second, I was checking to make sure it was zipped, and it was. So, again, I don't want to brag, but we've been doing shows with Paul of Paul and Storm fame. Check him out at paulandstorm.gov. And Paul Saborin has been doing shows with us for a long time. And the very first show he ever did, he did that thing about the show began when the audience has been being sufficiently horny for this one. But when Paul started doing shows with us, it was just my brother, and me. So now Paul does that before Sawbones, and it has taken on an uncomfortable vibe, I would say. It makes me feel slightly uncomfortable.
I don't usually think of our audience as being horny for.
Sorry, if you could say it one more time, I need a clean recording for this ringtone.
That was good. Just the ones.
Just the ones.
Just the one time. I don't have cake on me, right?
No. Sydney was really, really TO'd at me.
I was holding our just about 1 year old. She'll be 1 year old next week. And I was holding her right before we came out. And Justin handed her a big chunk of cake. And she proceeded to just do what babies do, which is kind of wipe it on her face. And then wipe it all over me. And I was like, why? Why?
In my defense.
There is none.
There is none. Actually, I don't have one. Hello, Alabama. What a pleasure it is to be here.
So whenever we go on the road and we do shows, live shows, we like to try to find topics that relate to the area that we're doing our show in. And what was really cool...
Calm down. We don't make you all come up with it. We do it ahead of time.
What was really cool about, as I started researching, I was looking at Birmingham and at Alabama and looking for different like medical topics. I'm used to, as I start my research, I'm going through a lot of like really kind of dense, like stodgy medical articles about stuff that like doctors wrote, and they're kind of boring sometimes. And what I started finding a lot of as I was looking into like historical references were what I have, and this is with the utmost affection, I call grandma blogs. There were so many amazing like firsthand accounts, like this oral history of all these stories from the area that they really look like maybe my grandma made them, and like, but they're cool, and they're like, they know the people who told these stories and they knew this person, and they're so anyway, it was really inspiring. It was really exciting to look into some of these, what I started calling like the medical legends of Alabama.
These are true though.
No, they're legends. True. Like they're true. But they were told in this just really fun, like personal way, which is a different, it's so different from all the boring articles I was
reading. Y'all have had a lot of stuff here. medical wise. We couldn't narrow it down to just one. So, Medical Legends of Alabama. I came up with that name. Sydney originally wanted to title it Alabama Medical Stories. And I said, Sid, it's good. It's so close. I love it. Let's build on that.
I am one of those boring doctors who usually
right.
writes
I'm the grandma in a relationship.
You are the grandma of our relationship.
Come on.
No, it's really true.
We're all trying to have a good time here tonight, Sid. Come on.
He has two cake carriers. Like, nice. Like, fancy ones.
That's untrue. I have three. Besides, anything could be a cake carrier if you believe it yourself. Please, we're running out of minutes, Sydney. Okay. Medical Legends of Alabama, so, cannot wait.
As I started looking into the history of medicine in Alabama, what I found is that there was this like theme of these systems coming in. Like the first like comprehensive public health system was really created in this state. And which is really cool, but like what came with it was this resistance to any of it. Like a lot of people were like, get out of here with your public health. I don't know who you are, and you're from the government, and I don't trust you. And like this theme ran through a lot of the stories. And this probably started with what one author called the Alabama Doctor War, which was a little melodramatic. Which is really the story of like the beginning of medicine as a discipline in the US, because in the mid-1800s, medicine here was just whatever. Anybody could call themselves
here
a doctor.
In America, not Alabama.
No, just any, yeah, in the US. Medicine was, anybody who said like, I'm a doctor, was a doctor. And especially in more rural places where you didn't have a lot of physicians or any at all, if you had usually a guy come through town with a briefcase full of medicine.
Cocaine.
Then, and they said they were a doctor, it's like, listen, we don't have anybody, this is good enough. So, you know, you had, actually the cost of medicine was pretty low because there was tons of competition because anybody could be a doctor. So you had all of these, like, the traditional doctors who actually went to some sort of schooling and apprenticed other physicians and learned some kind of science who were arguing for like a traditional kind of medicine. And then you had this whole other group that became known eventually as the eclectics, which were just kind of doing their own thing. And at the time, that made a lot of sense because if you looked at traditional medicine in the 1800s, your doctor would come and be like, well, I don't know. I know there are germs now because we're at that point where I've learned that germs do things, but I also have no idea what to do about this. So I'm just going to bleed you and then give you some mercury.
And then cocaine.
Cocaine was a big part of it. So was opium, was a big part of it.
And opium is part of it. You guys into David S. Pumpkins? I don't know. So. He's here tonight.
A lot of
Come
David
on out, David.
We have Tom Hanks on our podcast.
But we didn't. We just got David S. Pumpkins. He won't answer to Tom. He's been really weird backstage. Actually, kind of an unnerving presence.
It's almost like we tricked him into coming here and he doesn't know why he's here.
Yeah.
We don't have any of the money we promised him. So the eclectics came in and said, I know that these doctors went to school or whatever you want to call it, and we didn't, but also they're not helping you, and in some cases what they're doing makes you really sick. So what we're doing we think makes more sense because a lot of what they were drawing on were sort of like herbal traditional medicine. And if nothing else, some of the cures, even if they didn't work, maybe caused a lot less harm than some of the treatments that the traditional doctors were using. So there was this big battle at the time between these two kind of camps, which were really like everybody who went to whatever was considered medical school at the time and everybody who just said, I'm a doctor. And this came to a forefront in Alabama between all of these different doctors fighting. And it was really, money was the big problem, because the more people who join the eclectics, and the eclectics, the wild thing about it is it wasn't enough to just practice medicine and do it in a kind of a different way. They would teach you how to do it for yourself, which was really putting doctors out of business and lowering the price of medicine, because they would come and like
deputize people.
Yeah, like here's your, it was almost like sort of like a multi-level marketing kind of thing. Like, here's your kit of herbal medicines that you can buy from me, and then you too can be a doctor. And this was a problem all over the U.S., and in response to this, a lot of doctors started organizing, and this is when you see the AMA, the American Medical Association, first form to try to start, like, standardizing, here's what a doctor is, here's what it means to be a doctor, here are the tests you have to pass, here's the, you know, you have to have this degree and this license and all that, and if you're not, you're not a doctor. And it was actually in Alabama, the Medical Association of the State of Alabama was formed like right alongside the AMA. It was one of the very first states to really try to like formalize that and fight back and say, no, we need to have like doctors who are doctors and not just anybody be a doctor.
They started taking out the eclectics, right? It says,
well, I mean, they didn't.
No, like, they started taking them out by any means necessary.
No.
Rolling doctor hit squads.
No.
Taking out all fakes.
No, not like that. Just like that person's not a doctor.
They'll never know that it was a crime because they know 8 places on the human body to poke to kill somebody instantly. That's why I try not to get Sydney too mad at me. The secret to a happy marriage is know that the other person could kill you and get away with it, no problem.
Is that why you've been taking Taekwondo?
Yeah, right. I don't have any defense. I'm a blue belt, Sydney. Give me 3 years, maybe.
A big part of this in this state was Dr. Jerome Cochran, who was kind of like the father of public health, at least as far as Alabama is concerned, and probably should be as far as a lot of other states are concerned, because he was one of the first doctors to start promoting the idea that there are things doctors can do to improve the health of a community and prevent illness on the front end instead of waiting to treat it after somebody's already sick. And so he created this whole public health and sanitation system that was really revolutionary and would become the model for a lot of other states to follow. It started here. The problem he kept running into is that he had to organize all the doctors. So now, like, we've created this organization that standardizes doctors. So he's got like an army, so to speak, of doctors, that word means something. But he's got to get them to give him data. Like, that's public health, right? You got to have data. You got to know, like, how many people are being born, how many people are dying, how many people have this disease, and what are they doing about all these different, you need numbers. And so he started looking at all these doctors and saying, like, can you just start, let's start easy. Give me your birth records, like, how many babies did you deliver? And death records, how many people died that you pronounced? And what he found was that the doctors said, no. Absolutely not, for a couple reasons. One, they were too busy. I love that the big thing was like, I don't have documentation is such a hassle, which is, I love to hear, because it's the same thing doctors say now. Like, I don't have time to write all that down. What's the biggest pet peeve? You ask doctors, like, what's the biggest thing that's causing burnout? It's the electronic medical record. It's always blamed on documentation. And it was the same thing then. Nobody wanted to write anything down.
When did Jerry beef it? I don't know, Tuesday? I don't know. Old Seinfeld was on. It's a play that I go see. And they do Old Seinfeld the play. Every Tuesday at 9 p.m. It's called MWP, Must Watch Plays. There's like several plays they do every Tuesday. They do Black and White Frasier, Old Seinfeld, Caroline in the Village.
Caroline in the Village? Like, that's a wild reference that you just pulled out. Sorry, I'm just saying.
Full Shack? That's something. Full Shack, thank you very much. Acquaintances. That's something.
So
Mork and Mindy, who was a witch. She communes with aliens.
The medicines that escalate macabre for the mouth.
You know, it's tempting to say, I'm going to start on the big new thing. You know, when the new year comes, I'm going to get it all figured out. Here's what I want to tell you. There's never been a better time to start your dream than right this second. And there's never been a better way to start than with Squarespace. We've been telling you about Squarespace for years, and that's because it's simply the best way to make a website. I mean, there's no other way to put it than that, folks. People have been using Squarespace to make incredible professional-looking websites. And they look professional because the templates they're using, they are made by real web designers. So they're making, like, building blocks that are going to look great. You just bring your stuff, your images, your things you want to sell, any of that. And Squarespace is going to help you make a great platform for it. Head to squarespace.com/sawbones for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code sawbones to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Sid, scrubs aren't like any other kind of clothes. Is that right? Scrubs aren't just like regular clothes. They're action clothes. They're clothes you gotta be able to perform in.
That's true. I definitely think that function is the primary concern with scrubs. But as someone who spends, I don't want to say the majority of my life, but at least half of my life. No, it is the majority of my time in scrubs. I also
don't know about sleeping. You don't sleep in scrubs.
No, but you could if they're comfortable enough, which these are. But you also want them to look nice. Mm-hmm. And that's what's nice about Figs is that they are very functional. I'm not worried about when I'm down on the sidewalk doing my street medicine and my Figs. But also, I look nice. I get compliments on them. People don't always know they're scrubs.
Oh.
Yeah, that's how nice they look.
Well, that's a huge compliment because I know a lot of times scrubs have a reputation for not looking great and also being kind of itchy.
Yeah, these are not itchy. They're super soft. They're comfortable. I don't sleep in them because I do wear them to work and that would not be sanitary. But if I washed them, I could sleep in them. That's how comfy they are.
Sid, what is the number one reason that you have to do laundry every single week for you personally?
My scrubs.
Your scrubs. And wouldn't that be a little bit easier for anybody who's in the scrub game if they stocked up a little bit, had a few backup pairs?
Absolutely. Get yourself some more Figs. They're antimicrobial, so they'll keep you protected. They're durable, so you can wash them over and over again if you need to, like I do. And like I said, you look nice. You're going to look like a TV doc.
Like a TV doctor.
Yeah, like a TV doc.
It's the perfect time to stock up with some fresh outfits for the year, and Figs just dropped a brand new collection of limited edition styles and accessories. If you're in healthcare or shopping for someone who is, you can get 15% off your first order at wearfigs.com with the code FIGSRX. That's wearfigs.com, code FIGSRX.
So, clearly the doctors were very busy. And then the other thing is there was just a lot of distrust. The idea that, I mean, one, if you've got this guy coming in and he's like, listen, I'm with the government and I want to know how many of your patients died. Wait, doctors were instantly like, why? What are you trying to say?
Right.
Well, I'm not telling you that. Nobody. He had tons of, that was actually the first problem. He had tons of doctors who turned in like zero deaths. Nobody died.
Crushed it.
In this entire, it'd be like for a whole county. Like how many people died in the county? Nobody.
Nobody. Burst a bajillion. I win.
Like, it's been 5 years. Nobody died. Nope, nobody died. I don't know. Nope. It's going great here. I'm really good. Don't come.
I'm the best.
Don't come here to the town.
Dr. Oduo rules.
And when he tried to, like, lean on the community, when he tried to start saying, like, listen, if you don't report, like, you're going to get fined and you're going to get in trouble and, like, maybe you won't be able to serve this community anymore, the communities would actually protect their doctors and be like, well, forget it. We won't fund your public health system anymore then. You can't have any of our money. We won't pay our taxes. Eat it. And so like, they really protected. So it took a long time, of course, eventually, and like, this system is really revolutionary for the time. The idea of, like, collecting these statistics and start implementing, like, better sanitation methods and public health started here in Alabama. And eventually, it spread through the state and spread to other states, and it was a really effective program. Alongside that, carrying into our next story, was Dr. Judson D. Dowling, who was one of the health officers who would have been coming out into the communities like, I'm a doctor and I'm sort of with the government and I want to ask you questions and intrude on your lives. And that was not popular at the time or any time. Like, nobody likes that, really.
I do. I work out of the home, so Well, company, you know, it doesn't hurt.
So if Dr. Dowling came to your house and said, listen, we are working on ordinances to start pasteurizing milk because there's a bunch of germs in milk, and if we heat it up, then we kill them, and then people don't get sick and die when they drink milk. And so we would like to start doing that in your county. How would you feel about that? And also, we're going to have to inspect periodically. So not only are we going to start enforcing pasteurization, but then we're going to come out and check your milk for, like, bacteria counts and stuff and make sure, like, you actually did it. How would you feel about that?
I would say all my milk's already pasteurized. I buy it at Walmart.
Well, I mean, it's 2019, so that's a...
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, this...
You didn't... listen.
This is 1921.
If you're going to do a hypothetical, you got to set a scene for me,
so,
please.
So it's 1921.
Okay. Okay. Dun, 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 dun. Well, partner...
Nope,
I don't
nope.
know much about nope. pasteurization. Do you know about Jesus and stuff? That's me in 1921.
Mm. So the people that Dr. Dowling started visiting were not fans of this either. They thought this sounded very intrusive. They didn't like the idea of inspections, and they didn't know why we needed to heat up milk. That seemed weird. So, in response, he was kidnapped.
Alabama.
So, in the middle of the night, masked vigilantes came and kidnapped him from his home and roughed him up a little bit and then told him, you have 30 days, leave town.
Can I say? Reasonable. For people that just kidnapped you and beat the stuffings out of you, it's, like, very reasonable, like, oh, we don't want you. I mean, make sure you have another place lined up, and it's not a big deal.
Now, this actually helped turn the tide, the opinion of the community, because this was not the response people wanted. Like, they were suspicious. They didn't like the idea of this, but they didn't want to beat the guy up. And so, in response to this, people found it so outrageous that this poor doctor would get beaten up for just wanting to pasteurize their milk. There were actually laws passed that made it illegal to wear masks in public or in parades. Which I found very specific.
Hey, are y'all okay? Are y'all doing all right? The parades thing is great, because it's like... that guy's dressed as Little Caesar. I think he's about to go steal someone so they don't heat up milk.
That part of the laws were also that you couldn't lure someone out of their house under false pretenses. I really appreciated that, too. Like, hey, free pizza.
That or free pizza.
Anyway, because of all this, by 1923, they were pasteurizing 80% of the milk, and the rates of typhoid were way down, so it worked. It was great. It was great. One of my favorite stories that I kept stumbling over was about Davy Crockett. Apparently, in Davy Crockett's many travels throughout the South, he spent some time in Alabama. He came on, like, a prospecting trip, and while he was here, he got really sick. He got some kind of fever, and, like, if you look into, like, medical records of the time, like, what did he get? It's always, like, mountain fever, or swamp fever, or... I don't know, evening fever, morning fever. It's just a fever, and whatever he was near, he was like, there's a tree, it's a tree fever. So he got a fever, and he was very sick, like near death. And so he ends up in this valley that's owned by this family, the Jones family. And he writes, and that we know that this happened, this isn't fake, we know this happened because he wrote about it in his own words. The wife of Mr. Jones, who owned the property, had a bottle of what were called Bateman's drops. And she thought, if they killed me, he was only gonna die anyway, so we may as well try these. Like, basically, you're about to die. I'm going to give you this medicine. It might kill you, but you're going to die. So, Bateman's drops. So she gave him the whole...
Was that their slogan? Anyway, these might kill you. They may not. Anyway, Bateman's drops.
So she gave him the entire bottle.
Bad.
He said, and this is from him, which throwed me into a sweat that continued on me all night. When at last I seemed to wake up and spoke and asked her for a drink of water. So he credited these Bateman's drops with saving his life. He spent all night sweating and then he was fine. So I looked into, what were these Bateman's drops? Bateman's drops were one of the most popular patent medicines of the time. And patent medicines were basically like fake medicine. They usually had something like opium or alcohol or something like that in them that made you feel really good, and they were really well marketed and branded, but they generally didn't actually treat or cure anything. Bateman's drops was one of the most popular, and it was probably because it largely just contained alcohol and opium, and that was it. So that's what she gave him a bottle of.
And it worked?
I mean, he got better. It's one of those, right?
Whoa,
where, like, he was
Dr. Smurl McElroy, don't you think we should talk about this a little bit? I mean, you've been pretty hard on opium and alcohol mixed together in bottles over the years, but it seems to have really done the trick for old...
It was one of
the Wild Frontier, David Crockett.
Then there was never a Dr. Bateman that these were named for. It was just marketed that it was Bateman's drops. He's Bateman. We don't know. It just sounds official. And they were one of the 8 most popular patent medicines of, like, that century. I mean, really, when they looked through that time period, everybody was taking Bateman's drops, which you could understand, because they were alcohol and opium. So
yay!
It made David Crockett feel good. This is going to seem like a bummer to mention, but I wanted to briefly mention the great cholera epidemic of 1873.
And I'm going to be doing some good jokes about the great cholera epidemic of 1873. Sensitive, tasteful jokes about a cholera epidemic that was apparently great.
So what happened, we knew about, so cholera is an illness that gives you terrible diarrhea is the main thing you need to know. And it's serious because it's serious.
I thought that was my moment, but no. Keep going.
It's serious if you can't rehydrate somebody. Now, especially in like the developed world, we can give you IV fluids and get you through cholera. Before we could do that, and especially when we didn't know what was going on, people could die and did from cholera quite often. So cholera was a big deal. It was a big, bad deal. And so when it landed in Birmingham in June of 1873, people were really freaked out. It probably came, they've traced it back. I think it's so fascinating that we have this record. They traced it back to this guy who's only known now as Mr. Y.
Okay.
Like the letter, not like the question, like Mr. Y. Why? Cholera. Who lived in Huntsville and then came to Birmingham. So it's Huntsville's fault. It actually, he moved and the cholera didn't come with him initially. It was when his stuff came. Mm. Like all of his stuff got
and
delivered
his jar
a few weeks
of
later.
Cholera.
He brought his jar.
Why did you save it, Mr. Y?
So he got sick, and after he unfortunately succumbed to cholera, they didn't properly dispose of all of his stuff. And that's kind of how this thing spread. So, like, the people who were exposed to, like, bedding and stuff, they got sick.
I'll take his toilet. Okay, well, probably shouldn't do that.
Those people didn't realize that they had cholera, so nobody properly disposed of that stuff. So it kept spreading from there. And at first, like I said, none of the doctors really knew. Like, we knew about cholera. They knew about, that cholera could pass and epidemics and, like, that there were certain ways to dispose of clothes and belongings and stuff, but it took them a while to figure out that it was cholera. So once they started to figure it out, their initial reaction was to burn pots of tar on the corners of the city. That's not effective against cholera.
Kind of a takeaway for you all tonight.
But it was commonly thought to be effective at the time because they thought it had something to do with bad air. So it's like they just burn some things and flush
out the
bad air.
Burn some tar to make some nice good air. That one doesn't even hold water logically.
What I liked about the story is that a lot of the doctors in the city stayed. Like, people vanished from the city during this epidemic. Like, just scores of people just took off. We're like, forget it. And this happened, I mean, when you read about cholera epidemics all throughout the United States, not just in Birmingham, the cities would just empty out. But the doctors all stayed, and the doctors all stayed to take care of people, a lot of them anyway. Other people who stayed were, one, a local madam named Louise Wooster, who was a very famous local madam who wrote an autobiography that parts of it might not be true, is my understanding, but if they are, lived a very amazing life. But there's a lot of folklore. But she stayed to help take care of all these cholera patients, and a lot of her employees stayed and also helped take care of cholera patients. So they were credited with, like, really caring for the sick and nursing a lot of people back to health. Alongside them was the city alderman, Francis P. O'Brien, who I mention him because he stayed and took care of sick people, got cholera, got so sick that they ordered him his own casket and printed his obituary in the paper, but he didn't die. What a cool thing to have. Can you imagine?
Anyway, this is my obituary.
And I'm still here.
So how much did you want for that used car? Did I mention I have my own obituary?
So that's
like
why I bring up a cholera epidemic. Okay. I just think that's amazing. All these people stay and they took care of people. And this is the last brief story that I want to mention. And this is not our usual sawbone story. Usually we kind of talk about, like, the weird or the wrong or the wild stuff that we've done in medicine. This is one of those, like, positive stories, amazing but positive, that I like to share, especially in lieu of the fact that it is Black History Month. This is a story I had never heard. It's about the first female physician who practiced in the state, who was also a Black female physician who practiced in the state. And this was in 1890. So this was at a time where the idea of women being doctors was still, you know, on the fringes. And so the fact that she was a Black woman doctor was a huge deal at the time. She had already gone through medical school, and there was an advertisement they needed a doctor. It was actually at Booker T. Washington had put out an advertisement that they needed a doctor to come and take care of some of the students at the local school. They needed a doctor on staff to come take care of some of the students. And so he put out this advertisement, and she decided that she would come and interview for the job. And he was a big fan, and he thought she would be great for the position, and so he wanted to hire her. But before she could do that, she had to pass the licensing exam for the state of Alabama to be a physician here. The licensing exam, and this, like, to think about this now as a physician, to have to take this exam, it makes me so anxious. The licensing exam was a 10-day oral examination, and each day you had to go in and sit face-to-face with a leading expert in that, whatever that day's test was on, in that field, and answer questions for however long they decided they needed to ask you questions. And so you can imagine she had to sit for this 10-day exam with, I mean, they were all white men, and answer their questions for 10 days, which is just, and she passed the exam. They could find no fault. So she passed the exam, and she went on to be a physician. And I think that's an amazing story, and it's one that we're not often told. I haven't even named her. Haley Tanner Dillon Johnson was her name. I realize I just haven't said her name. And Dr. Johnson passed this exam, and it's just, I don't know, 10-day oral exam, face-to-face with leading experts in the field?
I would have cried after
day three. I don't think I could have handled
it. I feel pretty confident that I could do it, but I am a mediocre white man, so I got that sort of built in. Alabama, thank you so much for being so cool. Y'all are fantastic. A lot of great medical history right here in your home state. We got a lot more show for you. I want to thank the taxpayers for the use of their song Medicine since the international program. I want to thank the Alabama Theater. Beautiful. I want to thank Paul Saborin. And we got a lot more show for you, so stick around.
But until the next time that we join you, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.